सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Home. Very good. Welcome back. Welcome also to all of you watching these classes online, attending these classes online. We continue where we left off in this early part of the Uddhava Gita. We're in the midst of a section where Sri Krishna, you know, there's a nice American expression, Sri Krishna is in a mood, so to speak. He's on a roll, as some other people might say. He's really launched into this scathing criticism of the futility of trying to find perfect peace and contentment through ordinary worldly activities. He's just bashed away at that again and again and again. Now and of course, yeah, just to summarize something I've mentioned before, it's like the futility is like the lady who was looking everywhere for her necklace. When will she find it? As long as she is committed to looking outside for her long-lost necklace, she'll never find it. So with that perspective, Sri Krishna blasts the futility of seeking perfect peace and contentment through worldly pursuits. In today's class, we take a little different direction. Sri Krishna takes a little different direction. Suppose someone understands that much. Okay, I get it. It's absolutely futile to seek perfect peace and contentment in this world, in this lifetime. Maybe I should focus on my next life. Maybe I should focus on going to heaven and doing enough rituals and holy deeds, as it were, so that I can go to heaven in my next life. Sri Krishna is going to address that. Before we see his teachings, it's interesting, it's important to recognize the fact that most religions, including most aspects of Hinduism, are focused on what happens after you die, correct? That is a conventional role of religion. Some sociologists would say it's to help people cope with the finality of death, perhaps, I don't know. But most religions, biblical religions, of course, speak of eternal heaven and hell that follow this lifetime. But even within the Hindu tradition, most other, I should put it the other way around, Advaita Vedanta and a few other schools are unique, few other traditions, I should say, are unique in saying that you can reap the benefits of spiritual life here and now in this lifetime. Most Hindu traditions say also focus on the afterlife. Even Vishishta Dvaita and Dvaita Vedanta, these Vedantic traditions, which are quite a bit unlike the Advaita Vedanta we study here, they both declare that the benefits of your spiritual practice will be reaped when you're dead. And I'm being a little sarcastic intentionally, because we're suffering now. We need a solution to our suffering now. Of course, we don't want to suffer in the next life, and that's also there, but I think it's unique. Not only Advaita Vedanta, other traditions also, some yogic traditions, Buddhism also, the focus is on now, being free from suffering now. And that leads, of course, to focusing on going, the opposite, that is, recognizing the impossibility of gaining perfect contentment in this lifetime, then let me try to get perfect contentment in my next lifetime. Let me try to go to heaven. And Sri Krishna is going to address that perspective in these coming verses. Resuming with verse 23. Ishtveha devata yajnaihi, ishtveha devata yajnaihi, svarlokam yati agnikaha, svarlokam yati agnikaha, bhunjita deva vatatra, bhunjita deva tatra, Bhogan divyan nijarjitan, Bhogan divyan nijarjitan. The subject of this sentence is at the end of the second line. Yajnikaha, those who perform yajna, those who perform ritual worship. So what about those worshippers? At the beginning, ishtva, iha, ishtva, having offered unto whom? Devata, having worshipped unto the gods. How do they worship unto the gods? Yajnaihi, by these yajnas, by these rituals, in specific, in particular, the Agni. It's not worship of Agni, but making ritual offerings into a sacred fire, and those offerings being conveyed to the devatas for the sake of gaining punya karma, which we'll see in the last part. So those yajnikaha, the worshipper, yati, goes. Where does he or she go? Svar lokam. You get that? Heaven. By performing these rituals, it's possible to go to heaven, and bhunjita. Then that person will enjoy devavat. Just like the gods in heaven, that person will enjoy tatra there in that heavenly domain. They will enjoy what? The bhogan, the pleasures. Divyan, not ordinary pleasures. Divine, don't ask me. In fact, there are all kinds. Sri Krishna himself is going to describe what some of those divine pleasures are in just a moment. So, bhogan divyan, that person will enjoy those same pleasures enjoyed by the gods in that heavenly domain. They will enjoy pleasures which are nija arjitan. Arjitan means collected. Gained, which are gained, nija, through one's own effort. So this is the use of, this is the application of using rituals for the sake of going to heaven. By the way, does that sound like a familiar scenario? Just like you go to work for for the sake of a paycheck and a comfortable life. The alternate, of course, is you can perform these rituals for the sake of, the difference being, you get the paycheck in this life, and you here in the ritual, you get the so-called paycheck in your in your next life. But it's the same mechanism. It's karma. Karma. This is all according to the doctrine of karma. According to your efforts, you get results. That applies in a worldly level. If you don't go to work, you don't get a paycheck. If you work harder, you might get a bigger paycheck. So it works at a worldly level, and it works at an otherworldly level, at the level of heaven. But instead of going to work, it's doing pious deeds following dharma, avoiding any adharmic acts, and a lot of emphasis on the performance of rituals. Remember, ancient times were extraordinarily ritualistic. Thank goodness that's mostly over today, but that was certainly true years ago. Now, Sri Krishna has already kind of sarcastically referred to the going to heaven. I forget, it was maybe 10, 12 verses back, where he sarcastically said, suppose you go to heaven, then you know, when you were here, you were competing with your peers. You know, you wanted the best house and the best location and all of this stuff. So Sri Krishna sarcastically said, when you go to heaven, you're going to compete with those gods. And the gods have their palaces, but who has their palace in the best location? So he made some reference to that before. Now he's going to continue to talk about the both the glories and the limitations of reaching a heavenly domain. And we'll see that in the next verse. Svapunyo pachite shubhre, svapunyo pachite shubhre, vimana hupagiyate, vimana hupagiyate, gandharvar viharan madhye, gandharvar viharan madhye, devi nam hridyave shadraka, Devi nam hridya veshadrika. Imagine yourself entering this heavenly domain. And what do you receive in this heavenly domain? You are, actually, second line, vimana, vimane, breaking the grammar, breaking the Sunday. You are in your celestial vehicle, vimana. Interesting how even in ancient times, there is a lot of emphasis on what you drive today. You know, people are kind of attached to their automobiles today. So apparently in ancient times, it wasn't so different. So imagine yourself in your celestial vehicle. What kind of vehicle? Shubhre, shining, great, wonderful. Svapunya upachite. You buy your car here based on money that you've earned at work. You get your celestial vehicle in heaven based on upachite, what you have gained, swapunya, through your pious deeds, through your doing rituals. So your car, you buy your car today, costs $50,000, whatever. So here, if you want that celestial vehicle, it is paid for in terms of the punya you have collected. Swapunya upachite, what you have collected. And imagine yourself in your beautiful new celestial vehicle, and sitting there in your vehicle, you will be upagite, you will be praised, gandharvaihi, by the celestial beings, gandharvas. Gandharva is a class of celestial beings that are especially known for being good musicians. So you don't want to be sung to by people who don't know how to sing. So here you are being praised by the best of the best, the Gandharvas. And viharan, you are playing, enjoying, madhye, in the midst of whom? Devi Nam, of beautiful goddesses. So all of this presumes, of course, that you are a male going to heaven. There was a very definite male bias in scriptures. Yeah, I don't have to tell you that. So the presumption is a male going to heaven, surrounded by these beautiful goddesses, and what about you sitting in your wonderful chariot of celestial vehicles, surrounded by these devis, being sung to by the Gandharvas, and you are Hridya Veshadrik. You are Veshadrik, wearing clothing which is Hridya. So beautiful. You are so beautifully adorned in your celestial vehicle. And he continues, Stribh kamagayanena, kinkani jala malina, kridanna vedatma patam, Sura kridesu nirvritaha. Few of you may have noticed in the third line there is an irregularity of meter. You don't worry about it, but a few of you may have noticed that. Okay, so you are in, imagine yourself in your celestial vehicle surrounded by these devis in the company of stribihi, women. Again, you can see the male bias, the assumption. And you are going around with these ladies, yanena, in your celestial vehicle. What? And this vehicle, interesting description, kamaga yanena. Your celestial vehicle is kamaga. It goes wherever you want. It makes me think of these new self-driving cars. you put in the address you want to go to. Kamaga yana. So the self-driving Tesla was anticipated here. Kamaga yana. All right. But unlike the Tesla, your celestial vehicle will be kinkani jala malina. It will be decorated by these strings of kinkani, little bells, decoration with all these little bells. I don't think there are little bells on the Tesla, although. Mr. Musk would say, we don't have bells, but we have bells and whistles. What are they? They have a floating mode. It can actually go in water. That was just on the news. It has some way of closing off the battery compartment so it doesn't get flooded. And then the vehicle will be buoyant if it's closed off properly. So I don't think it can do much, but it can float in the water. How about that? Bells and whistles. Anyway, why am I talking about Teslas? I don't. Let's come back to the verse here. Kridan, imagine yourself enjoying yourself, playing. Where? Sura akrideshu. Akrida is a place you go to play. We call them parks or gardens. So you are playing, enjoying yourself in the garden of the gods. How does that sound? That's literally what it says. You are enjoying yourself in the garden of the gods. You are nirvrittaha. You are completely content and so happy, so pleased. And the real significant part is na veda in the third line. Na veda. But you probably are not thinking about atmapatam, about when. Atma simply means oneself here. When you will, pata, fall out of this heavenly domain back to some other lower domain. You know, I mentioned actually in our earlier session, our meditation session, when you're eating ice cream, do you think about the fact that, you know, you have this small dish and it's going to be over in just a couple of minutes and then it's done, finished. It's only a few moments of happiness you're going to get out of that dish of ice cream. But while you're eating it, you're not thinking about that. So while you're enjoying all the goodies in this heavenly domain, you're not thinking about the fact that it too is temporary. In the Hindu tradition, going to heaven is being born and taking one life in a heavenly domain. That life has a beginning, that life has an end. You go to heaven based on the finite karmas, the finite good karmas, punya karma, that you've accumulated in while you were here in the worldly domain. You did a lot of pujas, you did a lot of yajnas, you avoided any acts of adharma. You accumulated sufficient punya karma to be reborn in a heavenly domain, but that karma is finite. And, you know, they call karma, they call the result of karma pala, fruit. And there's a reason, you know, why do we say karma pala, the fruit of karma? It's been observed by many others that fruit rots. You leave that banana out for a month. What will it look like? You know that. So, fruit rots. And the metaphor is karma pala gets exhausted, gets used up. Just like you accumulate money and then you exhaust that money. Here, it's not money, but rather punya karma. It gets exhausted. And when the punya karma that took you to the heavenly domain, when that gets exhausted, your time in heaven is over. By the way, when it's over, then you're going to get reborn. Can you get reborn into a better place? You're already in heaven. Any rebirth is going to be inferior to the enjoyment you have in heaven, whether it's rebirth into an earthly plane, or actually that'll be in a couple more verses, rebirth into a hellish domain. We'll see that a little bit later. But it is so interesting that we avoid thinking about the end of this enjoyment. So eating the ice cream, you don't think about the end of the enjoyment. And for good reason, because if you think about it, it's going to be over in a few minutes, you won't enjoy the ice cream as much. But that's a powerful metaphor for the fact that most people don't like to think about the end of the enjoyment of this lifetime. Right? Same thing. You don't think about the end of the ice cream as you're eating. In the same way, you don't think about the end of life as you're enjoying each day, generally. Do you think that's a blind spot in our thinking? It is, of course. And I joked with you before that if you think about the end of the ice cream, that's good. You'll eat less and put on less weight. It's good to recognize the reality of worldly life. It's good not to live in some kind of fantasy world in which everything is wonderful and goes on forever. We know very well life is not like that. So if we deliberately avoid thinking about our own deaths, we are depriving ourselves of several things. One is an opportunity for spiritual growth, because reflecting on your own mortality can engage you more intensely with a life of spiritual growth. But here's something else I've recognized, something that's becoming more and more clear to me as my age increases, and that is every day, many of you have already discovered this, as you approach the end of your life, the value of each day grows. Every day becomes more valuable, more important, and therefore more attention goes to each and every day. So this is a perspective that comes only when you reflect on the brevity of life, on the end of your own life. So here, this person in heaven is oblivious to the fact that pretty soon they'll be kicked out of heaven, so to speak, when their punya karma gets exhausted. Naive, right? So aren't we being naive if we fail to consider the brevity of our own lives? We would equally be naive. Okay, so what are the consequences? Sri Krishna concludes this topic. Tavat pramodate swarge, tavat pramodate swarge, yavat punyam samapyate, yavat punyam samapyate, kshina punya patat yarvag, kshina punya patat yarvag, anichan kala chalitaha, anichan kala palitaha. Tavat, as long as, pramodate swarge, as one revels in heaven, tavat, for this length of time. What length of time? Yavat, as long as punyam samapyate, as long as your good karma remains, as long as you still have good karma. I think I've given this metaphor long ago. Suppose you go on a vacation to Hawaii. Many people like to go there for a vacation. You go there with $1,000. $1,000 won't go very far in Hawaii. Certainly, if you spend $100 a day, which is pretty easy to do, in 10 days you've exhausted your money. You can't live your vacation comes to an end. You have exhausted the money with which you went to Hawaii. When that money is exhausted, you have to come back. In the same way, you go to heaven based on the accumulated good karmas. But when those good karmas are exhausted, then your time in heaven is over. Please, I've made this observation several times, but it's important to make it here, and that is the biblical traditions have an illogical belief. Now, you've heard me say before, belief is something you can't prove, you can't disprove. But beliefs can certainly be illogical and unreasonable. And from our Advaita Vedanta standpoint, the whole doctrine of karma is a matter of belief. You can't prove it, you can't disprove it, but there's nothing illogical about it. Absolutely reasonable. But in the biblical traditions, they hold that for your finite good deeds, you get eternal reward in heaven. For your finite bad deeds, you suffer in hell for all eternity. This is just bad logic. It doesn't make sense. Anyway, that error is not present in the doctrine of karma. So for finite good deeds, you go to heaven for a finite period of time. And kshina punyaha in the second half. And when your good karma is exhausted, then patati arvak. You patati fall. Actually, It says, fall your arvak, down. And you might say, well, what do you, why fall down? And it has to do with this word put. The verb put can mean fall. It can also mean fly. A bird patati flies. So here, it just patati doesn't always mean fall down, but he makes it very clear. Arvag, as I said, compared to a heavenly life, anything else is inferior. Therefore, arvak, you fall down, anichan, against your own will. Just like someone here in this life who is dying says, I don't want to die. What difference does it make? Actually, it makes a big difference. One who says, I don't want to die, that attitude creates so much more suffering, terrible suffering. I don't want to die. It's not a matter of your choice. Anichan. We are all going to leave this earthly lifetime, and similarly in a heavenly domain, anichan. You, against your will, whether you like it or not, you will leave that heavenly domain. Why? Kala chalitaha. Because you are chalita, because you are forced by kala. Kala, of course, means time, but here it can refer to the force of karma, which is unfolded over a period of time. So due to the force of karma, your punya karma gets exhausted in the heavenly domain. When it is reached zero, your lifetime in that heavenly domain is over. Now, okay, just one point to add here. Suppose someone says, okay, you enjoy a lifetime in heaven, then, well, let's go back to Hawaii. You come back from Hawaii, go back to work, earn another $1,000, and go back to Hawaii. Suppose someone has this idea. Well, I just go, you know, do some more rituals and get back to this heavenly domain. Do some more rituals, go back to this heavenly domain. Keep working. Is that really a good strategy? Because when you're at work, you're not in Hawaii. In fact, work can be tough. And similarly, when you're in this earthly domain doing rituals, you're not in Svarga. You're not enjoying. And there's something odd about human behavior, significant about human behavior, and that is we want contentment, happiness, peace, joy, 100% of the time. And that's very odd because, first of all, it's utterly impossible in worldly life to have a life completely everything, you get everything you want. So it's impossible. And it may seem like an unrealistic expectation then. So why do we have it? And let me illustrate how strong it is. And some of you may remember, I made up this story to illustrate it, because here in central New Jersey, we are in the pharmacological capital of the world. You have all these pharmacological companies. So imagine one of these local companies develops a drug, a medication, where you take that drug and you become happy 99% of the time. Pretty good. And suppose I have a store of these, I have a bottle of these drugs, and I give you one. Would you want one? Take 99% of, how much of the time are you happy now? Not 99% of the time. You'll take the drug. It's better than what you have today. But then tomorrow you come to class, and it happens to be the 1% of the time. Said 99% only. So during the 1% of the time, when you are not happy, would you be able to say, I'm okay being miserable right now because I'm okay 99% of the time? You wouldn't feel that, would you? You'd feel, no, I'm miserable. Why don't they improve this medication so it works 100%? Is you want, and the point I'm making is how absurd this expectation is that we should be, in a worldly sense, happy 100% of the time. It's an absurd expectation. Why do we have it? Any little moment of misery, we want to get rid of every little moment of difficulty. It's an unrealistic expectation. And here's a little, a surprising bit of Vedanta, a Vedantic perspective on this unrealistic expectation. We probably wouldn't have that expectation unless it were possible. But in a worldly sense, it's impossible. At a spiritual level, possible. Satchidananda Atma, your true nature, your as pure consciousness, never suffers. Not even a moment. So some Vedantic acharyas hypothesize, and it's a hypothesis, they hypothesize that because it is possible to have uninterrupted contentment in your own true nature as Satchidananda Atma, therefore we have this expectation, which from a worldly standpoint is utterly unreasonable, but with regard to Satchidananda Atma, absolutely possible. They use a metaphor for it, and the metaphor is actually it doesn't. I'll leave it out. It doesn't illustrate. It's the wrong illustration, so I'll leave it out. So this is an unreasonable expectation to have 100% happiness and contentment, which means the strategy of going to Hawaii and then coming back earning more money, going to Hawaii, then coming back earning, it's a lousy strategy because when you're back home, you're suffering and struggling a lot. In the same way, the strategy of going to heaven again and again and again, coming back and earning more punya karma through rituals, it's a lousy strategy, because when you're not in that heavenly domain, you are suffering. So then, suppose, you have to introduce the next portion of the text, suppose you get it. Okay, I'm not going to focus. So you figure out, I'm not going to get complete happiness and contentment here in this life. If I make it to heaven, I'll get kicked out after a while, so that's also temporary. So what are my options? Suppose someone thinks, well, I might work at increasing the amount of happiness I can enjoy in this lifetime. Improving or increasing how? Well, I'm really constrained by following dharma. Suppose I ignore those constraints and I seek happiness in this lifetime through any possible means, including adharmic means. Suppose that's the new strategy. So seeking happiness through worldly means, following dharma doesn't work. Going to heaven doesn't work. So let me try strategy three. Let me try to gain happiness in this world, ignoring dharmic restrictions. And that's our next topic, Sri Krishna introduces. Yadhyadharmarata sangad Yadyadharmaratha sangar asatam vajitendriyah asatam vajitendriyah kamatma kripano lubdah kamatma kripano lubdah straino bhuta vihinsakah straino bhuta vihinsakah. Yadi. Suppose a person is adharma rataha, inclined towards adharma. How would you be inclined towards adharma? Because of sangat, due to your association, asatam, with adharmic people. People who are asat in the sense of adharmic. You associate with adharmic people. It really shows the importance of satsanga. When you associate with good people, we're all, you know, it's often been said, we're like human sponges. We soak up whatever it is in the environment in which we are. When you come here each Saturday morning, you soak up this spiritual, I don't know what to call it, you soak up this environment, and it benefits you. Well, what is the anti-metaphor, the counterpoint? So on Saturday morning, you could go to Arshabodha Center, or you could go to Atlantic City, to all these fancy casinos. You can drink a lot of alcohol, and you can do a lot of gambling. So this is a counterpoint. And who are the people in those casinos in Atlantic City? Very different, perhaps, than the people sitting here today. So the environment in which you place yourself affects you. So here, one becomes adharma rataha, inclined towards adharma. How? Sangat. Due to association with asatam, with the ungood people, the not good people. The opposite of satsanga is dusanga. So due to dusanga, you become adharma rataha, inclined towards adharma. Va, or Sri Krishna says, suppose you are a jitendriya. Jita indriya is one who is self-controlled. A jitendriya is one who is not self-controlled. Like a child. But tell me, aren't some adults lacking in self-control? Big time, as they say. Yes, of course. Many adults are lacking in self-control. So either of these two situations can put you in trouble. Either you lack self-control, or you are inclined towards adharma, due to your dusanga, and as a consequence, you are kamatma. Atma here just means self, heart, your mind. So your mind is dominated by kama, desire, raga dvesha. You are driven by raga dvesha. You are kripanaha, lowly, and lubdaha, greedy, never satisfied. Always wanting more, more, more. You are straina. Again, male bias. You are inclined to chase after ladies. Straina. So you are inclined to chase after women. You would also be bhuta hinsakaha, hurtful to others. So you want to gain worldly happiness at the expense of others. So you want to climb the corporate ladder by throwing people off the ladder. There's a funny, an interesting American expression when they say you throw someone under the bus. I find that interesting. They use that in politics. So you throw your, you know, someone you're supposed to be loyal to, you you throw them under the bus. So it shows how selfish interests predominate. That's the person we're talking about. What about such a person? Sri Krishna goes on to say, Pashunavidhinalabhya, Preta Bhuta Gananyajan, Narakanavasho Jantur, Gatva Yat Yulbanam Tamaha. So, such people who, again, focused on enjoying this life even at the expense of others, even violating dharma. What about them? Alabhya, having gained, enjoying, pashun, animals, avidhina, without following the rules. This needs to be explained. In ancient times, people in India, Hindus ate meat. That's just a fact. And there are some people who want to deny this. No, Hindus have always been vegetarian, blah, 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 blah. It simply is not true. But many people try to say, you know this expression, whitewashing? You want to cover up? Now they have greenwashing, when you want to say that an ecologically harmful activity, you greenwash it, so it doesn't look as bad as it really is. Now consider that there's something called orange washing. Orange washing means making excuses for some aspects of Hinduism which are problematic. So to deny the problems of casteism is orange washing. And here, to claim that in ancient India, no one ate meat, orange washing. They ate meat. And how do we know that? There are many rituals described in the Yajurveda which involve the offering of animals. It's right there in the Yajurveda. How can you deny it? Of course, Kshatriyas ate meat. Vaishyas ate meat if they could afford it. Shudras probably couldn't afford it. This is the reality of life. And Brahmanas ate meat when it was offered in a ritual according to the Yajurveda. So, what about those who don't want to, who cares about these rituals? Let's just eat the meat. So that's the people being described here who are killing animals for the sake of their taste buds, so to speak. By the way, this really puts the emphasis on ahimsa. The restriction against eating animals is not a dietary restriction. There are many dietary restrictions in other religions. Muslims won't eat pork. Jews have some very complicated dietary restrictions. This restriction against eating meat has nothing to do with diet. It has everything to do with ahimsa, not causing injury. So what happened is the emphasis on ahimsa grew in ancient times and reached a peak about 2,500 years ago. Not surprisingly, about the time of Buddha and the great Jain Acharyas. So the emphasis on ahimsa grew and came later. So, which means prior to that time, prior to 2,500 years ago, there was not the same emphasis on ahimsa as we find today. For that reason, eating animals was normal. Okay, enough said. And my point is, it's all about ahimsa. These are not dietary restrictions. So what about these people? Coming back to these people who don't care about dharma, all they care about is enjoying as much as possible in this world at anyone's expense. What do? Preta bhuta garan yajan, worshipping. So here, previously we had those worshipping for the sake of going to heaven. There are other forms of worship which are done not for going to heaven, done for the sake of worldly accomplishments. This is the so-called black tantra. The tantra is a whole school of philosophy. And tantra, some forms of tantra might be legitimate sadhana, but some forms of tantra are not legitimate sadhana. So tantra can involve the use of rituals, not for the sake of going to heaven, but the use of rituals for the sake of worldly accomplishments. A famous example of this is doing a ritual for the sake of invoking harm on someone who is standing in your way and preventing you from accomplishing what you want. This is an example of the harmful form of tantra. So these people, yajan, worshipping, not for the sake of going to heaven, but for the sake of removing obstacles to their enjoyment. Who do they worship? Preta bhuta ganan. They worship the demons and ghosts, means they are engaged in these tantrika forms of worship, for the sake, again, not for the sake of going to heaven, for the sake of worldly goals. What about them? Such a jantuhu, such a person, avashaha, necessarily, helplessly, gatwa, goes where? Narakan, to hellish domains. Avashaha, without no choice. Choicelessly falls into these heavenly domains. Yati, they enter into these domains of ulbanam tamaha. The most, ulbanam is what is absolutely undesirable, unclean, filthy, nasty tamaha, darkness. They enter this realm of terrible darkness. And the sentence continues. We'll see one more. It says, Karmani dukko, Karmani dukko darkani, Karmani dukko darkani, Kurvandehe nataih punaha, Kurvandehe nataih punaha, Dehama bhajate tatra, dehama bhajate tatra, kim sukham martya dharminaha, kim sukham martya dharminaha. Kurvan in the second line. So these people that are seeking worldly happiness, even at the expense of dharma, what do they do? Kurvan, doing what? Karmani, deeds, actions, which are dukkha udarkani, which lead in the future to suffering. The idea is, if you do adharmic acts in this lifetime, there might be a short-term, we use financial terminology, short-term gain, long-term loss. Like your investments. If you invest in something that gives you a short-term gain but a long-term loss, Not a good investment, right? In the same way, if you do a karma that has a short-term gain, like embezzlement, and has a long-term loss, like going to jail, not a good strategy. And of course, in a karmic sense, you commit papa karmas and you pay for it in the, maybe in this life itself, and if not, in the next life. And what about them? Doing these karmas, dehena, with their bodies, taihi, those actions done by them, punaha, then again, deham abhajate. After this life, they gain another body, taking with them the papa karma from their prior lives, and you get reborn. All that papa is waiting to afflict you. What will you do to run away, to escape the effect of all that papa karma? You are bound to suffer. Tatra, wherever you are reborn, you are bound to suffer. Look at this. You will suffer no matter how you're reborn. You're born in hell? Pure suffering. Born in his worldly domain? Some people would say 50-50. 50% suffering, 50% happiness. And if you're born in heavenly domain, you might be tempted to say 100% happiness, except it comes to an end. It's limited. It's finite. There is no solution to escaping the consequences of all that papa karma which results in suffering. And so Sri Krishna says, Kim Sukham Martya Dharminaha. It's a little idiomatic. Kim Sukham. How is it possible to gain happiness? Martya Dharminaha. For people who are mortal, for mortal beings, how is it possible to find perfect happiness, contentment, and peace? The obvious answer is, it's not possible for mortal beings to gain perfect contentment and peace. Fortunately, you're not a mortal being, right? Every single body is subject to affliction. Every mind is subject to affliction. Thank goodness that you are independent of your body and mind, which will always be subject to affliction. The solution is to discover your true nature as pure consciousness, as Satchidananda Atma, which remains utterly unaffected by the afflictions of the body and mind. This is the Vedantic solution to the problem. Arguably, there's no other solution, right? Going to heaven doesn't solve the problem. Getting reborn into the earthly domain doesn't solve the problem. Obviously, going to a hellish domain is not desirable. Where is the solution? If you want to be free from suffering, where is the solution? And the solution is disidentification with body and mind. Notice I withdrew that word detachment. It's not about detachment. It's about recognizing that the body and mind are not who I am. My true nature, your true nature, is as a conscious being, pure consciousness, that consciousness being Satchidananda Atma, the so-called inner divinity. This is the Vedantic approach. Okay, we have this, I have to say, this is fun. It is so different from the Bhagavad Gita, but it's still Sri Krishna's teachings, but coming out in a really different way. None of this was said in the Bhagavad Gita, and it's so delightful to hear Sri Krishna's teachings in this very delightful way in Uddhava Gita. Okay, we'll continue next week. Some announcements. Tomorrow, Sunday, we have our Upadesha Sahasri class at 10 o'clock. And please come and join us. Brilliant teachings of Sri Shankara. It'll be followed by satsanga. Last week, we live streamed the satsang for the first time. It went well, so we're planning to continue that live stream. Also tomorrow, we have this Samashraya support group. It's a support group for caregivers of those with mental illness. So if you are caring for someone with mental illness, it would be very helpful for you. Vasanti leads the support group. You'll meet here in this hall tomorrow at 4 p.m. So come at 4 p.m. for the support group. We'll conclude with our prayers at the altar. Om Gananahan Tva Ganapatigam Avamahe Kavinga Vinam Hupamashravastamam Jeshtarajam Brahmanam Brahmanaspatahana Shranvan Utibhisida Sadhanam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishvaro Gururatmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyomavad Vyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsa Chanuramardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritangamaya, om shanti 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 om tat sat.